I can't believe it.
Believe it, Byron. AJ Styles is the WWE champion.
Business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You fat, delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I know I probably should not be doing this show right now. I'm still on the mend, but I have not missed a week since May of 2010. So I said if I'm feeling up to it, I have to at least try to do a shorter show, especially with all of the news from this week. Just the Survivor Series changes and developments alone. There was a lot that happened this week. This is episode 521 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, November 12, 2017. I am the Solid Monster. I will get into what happened to me this week for those of you who care. It was not a fun week for me, not the week I was hoping for. Coming off our successful 10-year anniversary show last Sunday. It was Sunday, right? Yes, last Sunday. I don't even know what day of the week it is anymore. And I have to thank you all right off the bat for everybody who showed up live for the stream on YouTube, 10-year anniversary podcast last Sunday. For those of you who could not make it live, or perhaps you were in another country and it was way too early in the morning, but you listened to it either on the download, on the feed, or went to the YouTube stream video on our YouTube channel, show clocked in at almost 4 hours long, so only a little shorter than the first live stream we did for episode 500 back in June. I tried to get to as many phone calls this time as I possibly could. You guys slammed it on the calls. It was just great. I had a lot of fun doing it. I'm sure we'll do more in the future, but I wanted to do something special for those two big sort of show milestones this year, episode 500 and the big 10-year anniversary. They happen to just come within a few months of each other. And again, I can't thank you enough to everybody who had all these wonderful memories to share and nice things to say. It's just very cool. So I want to just say thank you. And also thank you to Noah Mark, who also pulled through again, and he was screening calls and helped me out with some of the intro stuff. I did the intro video that you saw, which, by the way, there was a video that I recorded. You can see it. I do link to it. It was a little botched on the live stream. The audio was a little wonky, but I linked to the full uninterrupted video within the YouTube post. So if you want to watch it, you can do so. But thank you to Noah for all of his help. And thank you to Audible, who continues to be a great partner for this podcast. I'm not going to say much here other than if you want a free audiobook and you want to sample the service for 30 days, you can do so using our link, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. We have about a month and a half left here in 2017 to really kill it on the signups. We're having a good year so far. I want to end on a high note. So audibletrial.com/solidmonster. If you've been waiting to cash in on your free book, now would be a great time to do it. Got Jim Ross's book, Justin Roberts, a lot of other great books up there, The Death of WCW, so head on over there. And I want to say thank you to all of our PayPal VIPs who donated this past week. $10 or more, as you know, will get you a wrestling nickname. You can go on thesolidmonster.com and click the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page if you would like to contribute. John Loose Cannon Lopez, thank you very much. Deadpool James Herrera, thank you. Beast Mode Brock Joseph, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Masgrave Micah Harshaw, the Marietta Mahler, Alexandru Mata, Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson, Rolex Robin Party, Jonathan Grandmaster Grunwald, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Steven Handyman Halistic, the Belgian Brute, Nicholas Overmeer, The Show Off, Corey Van Dam, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Gabriel the San Diego Beer Snob Solis, The Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, Tyler the Boss Williams, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, Midnight Menace, Nicholas Knotts, The Chin Crusher, Karsten Axe, Stephen Foulmouth Fowler, Arrogant Alex Matthews, Burnus Zero Johnson, We have the Warlock, Sean Rue, the Slicer from Cicero, John Garcia, Puddle of Blood, John Pudney, the Human Highlight Reel, Michael Hilliard, John, More Money, More Problems, Morin, thank you very much, Efren Torres, one half of the Jaeger Bombers, I guess we can call him the Jaeger Bomber this week, Hawaiian Heartbreak, Camula Simeona, I hope I pronounced that the right way, Juan Sebastian Lopez, and Kaz Illustration, thank you very, very much. Also, just two more here, John Firecracker Finley, who turns 32 today, so happy birthday to John. He does a podcast called Last Minute Kickout for the website lastminutecontinue.com, reviewing all the main WWE pay-per-views and top stories each week in wrestling. You can find it on YouTube and on iTunes. Again, that's Last Minute Kickout. And last but not least here, Victor Brown, friend of the show, wants you to know that his game company, Playgrim Games, has a Kickstarter for a deck-building game based on the Ed Wood sci-fi classic Plan 9 from Outer Space. He's looking to try to get it funded. If you are a fan of tabletop games or movie games and want to support him, you may do so on Kickstarter.com. Go there, and in the search box, you could type in Plan 9 from Outer Space, and it should be the very first campaign that comes up. This is going to be a shorter show than usual, at least I expect it to be. I think it'll have some length, but this is not going to be the usual podcast. I didn't even watch NXT this week. I'm not even sure exactly what happened on NXT this week. I'm hoping this week everything will kind of get back to normal. I'll be able to get all caught up on everything, especially heading into next weekend, because next weekend is a big weekend. It is TakeOver War Games, and it is Survivor Series. So that's a big one coming up, and we'll have Survivor Series predictions next week and all of that good stuff. But I'm only going to get into a handful of stories. I may take a couple of mailbag questions, and then we'll wrap it up here. Because I had a little bit of an incident this week, as I kind of briefly noted on Twitter. It was silent for a whole bunch of days. It was kind of out of the loop. And the reason being, and I'm going to talk about this, obviously, but perhaps it was a case of AJ Styles' big championship win on Tuesday night was just too much for my heart to handle. But on Wednesday morning, I woke up with some pain in my left arm, which was kind of weird, because I don't know why I would have pain in my left arm. I thought maybe I laid on it. Who knows, right? Didn't really think anything of it. Got dressed and headed to work, as most people were doing on Wednesday morning. And as I was coming into work, I started having a lot of pain in my chest. The arm pain still didn't go away. The chest pain started. Now I'm starting to get worried. I'm like, what is going on here? So about 90 minutes later, I finally get to work. Now I am in a bad way right now. It is not getting any better. I feel like garbage. My chest hurts. My arm hurts. My jaw's starting to hurt. I don't know what's going on here. I'm getting very scared. Go to the office. People are looking at me. They could tell that something is wrong. I know something is wrong. I have to wait until 9 a.m. just for my doctor's office to even open. I'll call them, let them know what's going on, and see if they'll take me in. And what's scary about it is, you know, many, many years ago, my grandmother, who is passed away 17 years ago now. I mean, I haven't had grandparents in forever. But I was very close to my grandmother when she was alive. She was a big smoker. She had a heart attack many years ago. So I know the whole thing of the signs you look for when one is having a heart attack. Pain in the left arm, pain in the chest. So that's the first thing I thought of. I thought, I'm having a heart attack. And I thought, well, I'm too young to have a heart attack. This can't be that, but what else could it be? So I talked to the doctor and explained the symptoms to them. And my doctor happens to be a cardiologist by trade, because it just worked out that way. That's just what he, even though he's my GP, you know, he's just my general doctor. That's kind of what he does. And I never did get a chance to talk to him. I talked to his assistant, and they said, well, we can get you in later this afternoon, but based on what you're describing to us, I don't think that's such a good idea. And I said, there's no way. I can't wait that long. So I took myself to the ER, and I will tell you this now, that it was the scariest thing I've ever gone through in my life. It was the most pain I've ever been in my entire life. I mean, I've had acute, like, brief, you know, just shooting pains in like my neck or my back that have been awful. But I've never experienced anything like this in my life. I thought I was dying. Thought I was having a heart attack. Sitting there in the ER after I fill out all the paperwork. I'm just waiting. There's like two other people sitting in the ER. I'm sitting there. I can't even sit still. I'm clutching my arm. I'm clutching my chest. I just want to die. just put me out of my misery, please. Even now, as I'm doing this show, I have to be careful because, you know, I'm not in pain now, but my chest, I still have this sort of heavy feeling in my chest. But, yeah, they did all the tests that you would expect them to do, EKG and all this stuff, and everything sort of checked out normally, and they really couldn't figure out what was wrong, which didn't make me feel any better. The pain was only getting worse. I couldn't stand it. I wouldn't wish this on anybody. Child molesters and Nazis, that's about it. Otherwise, I would not wish this pain on anybody. So finally, they got me a room. And they said, we're going to keep you for observation. We're not going to let you go. And they finally got me hooked up on morphine, which was the only thing. And to be perfectly honest with you, even that first dose didn't really do much for me. By the second dose, which I requested, I finally started to get some relief. Long story short, what I'm told, and after all the tests and echocardiogram and all this stuff that I had to go through, being poked and prodded like a science experiment, and it's a teaching hospital, so you have doctors coming in with their students. One person's checking my chest, the other person's checking my chest. It seems like, and it's kind of funny actually in a way, given all the stories that have been going around about viral infections hitting WWE and decimating the roster and Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns and all these people. Apparently, it was a viral infection that somehow they think I picked up, and it attacked the sac. There's a protective sac around your heart. And the infection, it caused inflammation that was causing all of this pain that I was experiencing. I'm not sure how that relates to pain in my arm. I never really got a straight answer on that. But at least we got answers. And I was still having episodes where it would come and go. And anyway, I was in the hospital for 3 days this week until finally I was on, you know, meds that were keeping those symptoms at bay. I had one scare on Friday morning where I thought I was finally going to leave. And then in the morning, I actually slept for a few hours and then the pain came back again. And I said, ah, shit, I'm not getting out of here. But, yeah, took the medicine, felt better. Anyway, they let me go. I'm home. I haven't really been able to do much. I've been trying to take it easy. I am just desperate to just get back to my normal routine. I'm very bored. I'm very frustrated, but I'm happy to at least have that under control, because I'm going to be honest with you. Again, I've never been through anything like that in my entire life. And they said, you know, what you experienced, you were experiencing the symptoms of a heart attack. I can honestly sit here and tell you now, I kind of know what it feels like to have a heart attack, and surprise, surprise, it's no fun. It is not my idea of a fun time. It's very, very scary. I don't want to ever go through that again. I've got three different pills. I have to space them out over the time of day. I'm going to be on this medication now for the next 3 months. I'll do whatever I have to do just to make sure I never have to go through that again. But there are people who have recurrent cases of that, so that's what I'm a little worried about. But they seem to think everything will be okay, and you just gotta, you know, take it easy and just let it work itself out. So again, I'm not sitting here in pain. I do have this weird sort of, I don't even know how to describe it, like deep in my chest. Worries me a little bit. But there's nothing too angering, I think, about what happened in wrestling this week that's going to kind of set me off here. So I figure, why not try to do at least a shortened version of the show? Shouldn't stress myself out too much. If anything, there were actually a lot of positive things that happened this week that I could talk about. And at least I can get a show out to you guys and be productive and do something. So anyway, that's the story as far as my very scary, not-so-fun week of being laid up in the hospital for 3 days thinking I had a heart attack. Hopefully you had a better week than I did. One person who had a great week was AJ Styles. AJ Styles is now a two-time WWE champion. He beat Jinder Mahal on Tuesday night in Manchester at the SmackDown taping. I still call it SmackDown tapings, but at SmackDown. And color me surprised, I did not think they were going to change the championship on TV, number one, and number two, so close to the pay-per-view. I didn't think they'd do it. I didn't think they would do it. And I didn't have a lot of faith in them to do the right thing, but damn it, they did. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to applaud them for it. I'm going to give them credit for doing the right thing for a change, for pulling the trigger on that title change, putting it on the right guy, taking it off the wrong guy. And all of a sudden, Survivor Series has my attention now. And I know I'm not alone in this. I know a lot of you were not exactly overly enthusiastic about this card going into it. And I'm willing to bet many of you feel the same way that I do, and I'm just speaking for myself on this, but I had zero interest going into this pay-per-view, aside from the Shield against the Usos match that had been set up, the Raw Tag Champs against the SmackDown Tag Champs, and the Team Raw versus Team SmackDown match was kind of setting up to be a pretty damn good match, but we didn't really know all of the participants. All of a sudden, when you look at what they did with AJ, when you look at all these other changes that have happened, In just the last week or so, Survivor Series has gone from a show that I was completely indifferent to, a weekend where I was looking forward to War Games at TakeOver and nothing more, to being a must-see show. What a difference a week can make. AJ beat him clean in the middle with the phenomenal forearm. Place went nuts. People were just, I think it was a combination of just, oh my god, I just saw a title change, number one, and number two, just being genuinely happy that AJ beat Jinder to become the champion, because AJ, obviously, is a beloved figure on that brand. I think most people look at him as probably the best, one of the best in the world, certainly the best in the company right now in terms of guys who in the ring can go. And the championship, for once, is finally on the right guy. And what it does is it changes the entire complexion of Survivor Series, because all of a sudden we go from having a main event of Jinder Mahal against Brock Lesnar to a first-time-ever match between Brock Lesnar and AJ Styles. One of the few people that Brock has not been paired off with, who I had a real genuine interest in seeing him work with. And you're going to have people who talk about, well, AJ's a small guy, or he's an indie vanilla midget, you know, all these, you know, mentally defective people who love to still throw that whole vanilla indie midget thing about guys like AJ, who have worked, you know, in TNA, which was on Spike TV for so many years, and then in New Japan, and, you know, a show at the Tokyo Dome in front of 35,000 people, but they still use that brain dead argument because they're not too bright. But here's the thing about that. So when I think back to a lot of the opponents that Brock has had since he came back to WWE in 2012, in my opinion, if not the best match that he has had, certainly easily in the top three, was the match he had at SummerSlam in 2013 with CM Punk. And CM Punk was not exactly the biggest guy in the world either. He and AJ are pretty comparable, I think, in that way. He might be a little taller than AJ, but they're both, you know, smaller guys compared to some of the big monsters that they have on the roster. But those two went out there, they had like a no-holds-barred match at SummerSlam that year, had the match of the year, tore it up, and it was, if I could use the word dynamic, I guess, the most dynamic match that Brock has had that wasn't just suplex after suplex, and I love the hell out of it. And I look at this and I say, of all the people on the WWE roster right now who could go in there and bring Brock Lesnar to what I would consider to be a fun, exciting match, because a lot of Brock's matches, I'll admit, are not the most fun. I enjoy seeing him. He comes out, he feels so much more special than everybody else on the roster. But you're right. Sometimes when Brock gets in there, it looks like he just does not give a fuck. It is just suplex after suplex. It's a 6-minute match, and there's really not a whole lot to it. I like the match he had with Samoa Joe. Could it have been better? Sure. The match with Braun should have been a lot better than it was. It was a big disappointment. So it's hit or miss. You never really know what you're going to get with a Brock Lesnar match. He's got to be motivated. He's got to want to go in there and actually work and put on a good show. I have no doubt that AJ Styles is going to go in there and want to put on the best show he possibly can. If that means just him bumping around for Brock, fine. I'm sure they'll give him some offense. I have no illusions of AJ winning the match. I don't expect AJ to go in there and, you know, hit a forearm and pin Brock Lesnar or get him up for the Styles clash. But you can't deny the fact that this went from being a match that could have been a complete disaster, a complete clash of styles, no pun intended, to a match that can actually be one of the better Brock Lesnar matches I think that he's had since he came back to the company 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago. So I'm looking forward to it just from the perspective of like a match. All I ask is to be entertained. I want to be entertained and I want to have fun. That applies to matches. That could be an interview. That could be a comedy skit. It could be some other big angle that they do. Right? It's not all about matches and work rate. All I ask is to be entertained and to have fun and not feel like I just wasted 20 minutes or an hour or 3 hours of my life. That's all I ask. And with Jinder Mahal, all due respect to him, because I know he's worked hard. He accomplished a dream he thought he never would. All of these things. It's a great story, right? The fact is, I never saw what I would consider to be a fun, entertaining match with Jinder Mahal as WWE champion. Jinder Mahal coming out and cutting a promo, I feel like he sort of grew into the role a little bit. He dressed the part. He looks like $1 million. The physique, all of that, the Singh brothers, they're an entertaining at least part of his act. But I have yet to see, in the 5 or 6 months that he was the champion, a fun, entertaining match with him, a fun, entertaining interview segment with him. If anything, he's had some of the more cringeworthy interview segments that I've seen on WWE television all year. And maybe that's not his fault. The material they gave him for the Nakamura stuff I thought was completely atrocious. Some of the worst stuff we've seen all year on TV. It wasn't funny. You know, some people found it offensive. I just didn't find it funny or entertaining. So there has been absolutely nothing that this guy has done that makes me say, wow, you know, I really want to see this guy in the main event of Survivor Series. There was no way this company could have headlined Survivor Series with a Jinder Mahal-Brock Lesnar match. They were going to add John Cena to it as the guest referee. Why do you think they were even doing that? Because even they realized this match can't carry itself on its own. It needs help. Well, then why make the match in the first place? So they got the belt off the guy, and all of a sudden, they don't need John Cena in the match. That's why John Cena, and this is one of the other big stories this week, John Cena now, who's a free agent, remember, he can float around for whatever brand needs him the most, is no longer going to be a referee. He's going to be on Team SmackDown. He's going to be wrestling at Survivor Series. Why? Because they don't need him anymore. Brock Lesnar and AJ Styles is a match that can stand on its own. But to go back to what I was saying, you know, Jinder had 5 or 6 months of this experiment here, the 50th WWE champion, the modern day Maharaja, all this stuff, right? And he created this character for himself. Jinder Mahal is going to be fine. I mean, Jinder Mahal is in a much better position now than he was 6 or 7 months ago when he was, you know, a jobber to the stars. So even though he lost the championship, Jinder gained a lot from this, and I still think he could end up as a U.S. champion at some point, and who knows, he may get the WWE title back. It could happen. People, you know, he's owed a rematch. He lost the championship on Tuesday. As things work in this company, you get an automatic rematch. And there's people saying, well, you know, he's just going to get it back on TV this week. I see absolutely no upside whatsoever to them pulling a bait and switch and putting that belt back on Jinder this Tuesday, other than just to piss off a whole bunch of people and actually make the card worse after making it better. There's zero upside to putting the belt back on him this week. Would they do it in India? I don't think they... I mean, I didn't think they were going to anyway, but now, in light of other news that's come out, I don't think they're putting it back on him in India either. Because Triple H put a tweet out late last night issuing a challenge to Jinder Mahal for a match on at least one of the two India dates coming up next month. We don't know which date, if it's the 8th or the 9th. Could be both nights. But at least one of the nights, he issued the challenge. Jinder put a tweet out earlier I saw this morning accepting the challenge. And so it is official that in India, at least one of the two nights they have coming up, it will be a special attraction, Jinder Mahal, one-on-one, against Triple H. And Triple H called it, you know, it's going to be the biggest match in the history of India. Who am I to say it isn't? I can't think of another big WWE match they've ever had in India, so maybe it is. It may well be the biggest match they've ever had in India. I know originally it was going to be Kevin Owens wrestling Jinder in India, and so it's a little weird that they changed it. I don't know if that has to do with some of the alleged heat that's on Owens. We'll talk about him in a little bit. So Triple H and Jinder is official for India. There's no reason for that to be a WWE championship. Why would Jinder win the championship back before then to defend it against Triple H in India? There's no need for it. You can have AJ defend the title, but now that I think about it, they're Raw dates. They're not even SmackDown shows. Jinder wasn't even supposed to be on the show, except for the fact that he, of course, is, you know, he's Indian, so they moved him over to be on that tour, but it's not even a SmackDown tour. So no, I don't see Jinder getting the belt back this week. I don't see Jinder getting the belt back before India or in India. Could he get it back on the next SmackDown pay-per-view in December? It's possible. I'm not saying it's impossible he won't get it back at some point. But for everybody saying, oh, he's just going to win it back this week, he's not. He's not. I think we can rest easy that they're not going to put the championship back on him for a little bit, at least, if at all. I think he had his run. I don't know why Vince made the decision he did, other than I would hope as a good promoter, or somebody playing the role of good promoter, he realized that I can't possibly put this shit main event on our next pay-per-view, one of our big shows of the year. I have to make this change. And you know what? I don't know what they're going to do next. And I know it's easy to sit here and say, well, you know, they're just going to do this or they're just going to do that. So why should I get so excited? It kind of goes back to the whole Shield thing from last month. There were people who just, you have to realize that this is all just a ploy to get Roman Reigns. Of course it is. And it's okay to accept the fact that, yes, they're doing it in large part to get Roman over and to get people to cheer for him. But that doesn't mean you can't enjoy the fact that the Shield is back together. I was looking forward to it. I was actually kind of disappointed, frankly, when Roman got sick and got taken out of the pay-per-view. I mean, I was happier once I heard Kurt was replacing him, but, you know, I wanted to see the Shield reunion. Even though I realized, yeah, I could see why they're doing it. Same thing here. I don't know what they're going to do next. I can't predict what Vince is going to do. Who could have predicted that this would happen? I'm willing to sit here, though, and say that, you know what? They made the right move. For this week, at least, I applaud them. I give them all the credit in the world. They did the right thing. Good for them. Good for them and good for us. Because now, the way I see it, there's three things on this show for me personally. I'll speak for myself on this. There's three things on this show that I'm really looking forward to. Brock and AJ being one. Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, which really is shaping up, I think, to be a hell of a match. In the 5-on-5. And the Shield, most likely, in some form or fashion, against the New Day. Which is good for two things. Number one, I think that could be a hell of a match. And number two, as somebody who was looking forward to the Shield reunion and was deprived of it last month, now we'll finally get to see it. That's three things right there. That, for me, is a must-see show. And as far as Jinder, just to go back to him one more time, again, there was absolutely nothing in the last 5 or 6 months that I saw that would have me get excited for this match. The stuff with Orton sucked. The stuff with Nakamura sucked. There was no reason to think that him and Brock, of all people, Brock, who, like I said, needs to be in the ring with the right opponent to bring the best out of him. I'll tell you right now, we've never seen Brock and Jinder before, so who knows? Maybe they would have shocked me. But there was nothing about this match that would have had me think, man, you know, Jinder Mahal is the perfect opponent for Brock Lesnar. Just the opposite. Just the opposite. You know, and I know AJ's smaller and Jinder's all, you know, jacked up and everything with the big physique and all that. You know, and some guy, hey, some fans just love that. They just get off on that. Me personally, that's not why I watch wrestling. I don't watch wrestling to get off on guys with the big jacked up physiques. Hey, if that's your thing, good for you. That's not my thing. I watch to have fun and to be entertained. And that's, you know, AJ Styles, that's why I think he's the best thing that company has going for it right now. You can always rely on him in these situations to come through and put on a great performance. I expect nothing less at Survivor Series. We'll see if he can elevate Lesnar to that level instead of Lesnar bringing him down the way that he did in the match with Braun. Some people thought in the match with Joe. I mean, like I said, I liked it. I thought it could have been better, but we'll see. I'm excited to find out. Now, with that change, like I said, John Cena has been added to Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. Why? Hasn't really been explained why, but again, he's a free agent. So, I guess they have creative license to do with this guy as they please. Do with him as they see fit, even though the last time we saw him, he was on Raw. He lost to Roman Reigns. But, you know, The match at the pay-per-view now is shaping up to be pretty damn good. Now, when you look at Raw last Monday, if I could skip back to Raw for a second here, we had Samoa Joe and Finn Balor. Kurt Angle has officially added the two of them to Team Raw at Survivor Series, which is interesting because that's something I pitched before TLC last month when I was doing my predictions, in fact, for TLC, and I was talking about how I see things playing out. This is before everybody got hit by the viral infections, and before I got hit by the viral infection, which I blame Roman Reigns for, by the way. I have no proof of this. It's not contagious. I have no evidence of this, but I'll just blame him anyway for me getting sick. But what I thought would happen is I thought that the match at TLC was going to be replicated at Survivor Series, but for Survivor Series, they would have the Shield have, you know, two partners be added to kind of even the odds against The Miz and Strowman and the Bar and all that. And I thought the two guys that should be added to Team Raw at Survivor Series should be Samoa Joe, who had not yet come back, and Finn Balor. And I said the same thing after TLC, I think. So to see the two of them on Team Raw is great. That's exactly what I was hoping they would do. Not exactly the same plan. They're not teaming with the Shield, but they're part of Team Raw, and that's all that matters. Balor and Joe wrestled each other on TV last week. I thought they had a good match. And the one thing on that I just wanted to say here before I get back to all the other stuff is, you know, watching them have the pull apart and Kurt coming out and saying, you two guys are going to have to get along because you're going to be on Team Raw at Survivor Series. It's very obvious that we're not going to be getting Demon Balor getting his revenge on Demon Kane, which I'm fine with, but it makes it even worse what they did, having Kane kill the guy twice on TV. Of all the people they could have done that with, I'm not sure why they felt they had to use Balor in that situation, especially if it wasn't going to lead to anything other than just, you know, to make Kane look strong before he ultimately loses to Braun Strowman. Like, the guy attempted to murder Braun Strowman on TV. I'm not sure how much stronger he's supposed to look. He tried to murder the man. I don't think you need to sacrifice a guy at the level of Finn Balor just to make Kane look good here for this feud against Braun Strowman. Skipping back, I'm jumping back and forth here between Raw and SmackDown and some of the top stories of the week. Another one coming out of SmackDown involved Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, which this one's very weird to me. I'm not quite sure what's going on here. I don't think anybody really knows what's going on aside from the people close to the situation. But Sami Zayn had a match with Kofi Kingston, I believe it was, right, on TV. And Kofi beat Sami. As soon as the match ended, Kevin Owens jumped in the ring. He started attacking Kofi. The New Day came in to try to, you know, save Kofi. And Owens bailed, as did Zayn. The heels got the hell out of there. Now, apparently that was not the plan. The plan was for the New Day to come in and to beat up Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn after Sami already lost the match. So maybe Owens would have run in, but then the New Day would have come in and they would have beaten them down. They would have beaten down the two Canadians on that show. And that didn't happen because Owens and Zayn bailed. They went to the back and that was it. Now I watched this. Nothing looked out of the ordinary to me. I saw some people talking about, well, you know, it was obvious that the New Day, things were confused and they didn't know what to do. Maybe you're watching something different than what I was watching, but everything looked fine to me. Nobody looked confused. Nobody looked like they missed a cue. You know, nobody looked like, oh, what should I do? Everything looked perfectly fine and normal, like you would expect. Kevin Owens was at ringside. Sami got beat. Kevin got in. He beat up Kofi. As soon as New Day came in, the heels bailed. That's what heels do. There is absolutely nothing out of the ordinary about this. Now, I'm not saying that they weren't supposed to get their asses kicked, but just, you know, all I'm saying is what I saw that actually happened looked totally fine and natural, like you would expect to happen on TV. But, you know, different reports. I saw Ryan Satin over on Pro Wrestling Sheet had one report that said that was not supposed to happen. People were very upset. They thought it was very unprofessional. And they were sent home early from the tour. And this is why, obviously, there is some smoke here. I'm not saying it's all bullshit and everything's fine. Because this was a very newsworthy European tour because of the people who were not on the tour. Main person being Roman Reigns. But there were people who got sick, there were people who couldn't make the tour, and WWE felt like it had to make good for the people who were missing. That's why Kurt Angle wrestled the other night. I think he was teaming with Ambrose and Rollins again. I know I saw footage of him in there with Samoa Joe. So Kurt Angle, whose big return to the WWE ring for the first time in 11 years came on 2 days' notice. Here, on like a day's notice, if that, is wrestling again here on this European tour. So, okay. But they did that. Triple H had to fill in for Roman Reigns to do the little Shield reunions, right, last week. So they really felt like, okay, we've got to give these people something special here because we can't deliver on the things that we had promised them. The last thing you would think WWE would do, unless there was really a reason to do it, would be to take two of their biggest stars and take them off the road. Take them off the tour before the tour is even done. There's got to be a reason for that. Now, Kevin Owens left, there was another international tour, I think it was in South America. He left that tour early a few weeks ago, but that was for a family emergency. That was not because there was heat on him or something he did, bad behavior. So that's different. But this is now the second time that Owens has left an international tour early, but for him and Zayn both to be sent home tells me that, yeah, somebody was pissed off at them. They did something wrong. And then there's other reports that, you know, people have not been happy with them because they've been very vocal about creative and they've just been very difficult to work with. And it's interesting when I read that, it reminds me of Jim Cornette of all people, because Jim Cornette had issues with both of these guys from working with them in Ring of Honor. Jim Cornette was not a Kevin Owens fan, not a Sami Zayn fan, and vice versa. I think it goes both ways. Not fans of each other. But Cornette said, you know, these guys, and they work together because they're best friends, Owens and Zayn. He goes, they're just, I remember him talking about them being difficult to work with. Whether it's not liking creative or whatever it is. I guess he just felt they were obnoxious and just very difficult to work with, and I remember him talking about this before these guys even came to WWE, and he questioned how much success they would even have in the company if they came in with those attitudes. Now, Cornette's been proven wrong in that they've acclimated just fine. Kevin Owens now has been there for a couple of years. He's had a lot of success. He's been the champion. Sami Zayn, you could argue, has not had the kind of success that people thought or maybe were hoping he would. But I think he's had, he's done okay for himself. He did better in NXT. You know, he was the NXT champion. But so far, you know, they've done well for themselves. This is the first time I'm hearing these rumors and these reports of them being difficult to work with. But that was the first thing I thought of. I thought of what Jim Cornette said before they even came in. These two are going to be difficult to work with. And so that was an interesting way for some of these websites, I felt, to or Satin, who was talking about sources of his that he talked to. It's a very interesting way for that to be phrased, because I could see there being some truth to that. But, you know, you got two guys here who were very passionate about what they do, and who's to say that, you know, they weren't being pitched an idea that really was garbage. At the end of the day, though, you know, you work for the company and you do what you're told. I mean, I have no issue with guys speaking up. I mean, if there's, you know, creatively speaking, if there's something that's really bad, Jinder Mahal, I mean, I hate to keep beating up on the guy, but I'll go back to him. You know, I said before, the stuff where he was doing the Asian jokes about Nakamura, I mean, you can make the argument, oh, that's racist, that's just offensive, that's this, that's that. I just didn't think it wasn't even funny. There was absolutely nothing about that worked on any level at all. And so I think to myself, well, if Jinder Mahal is such a big shot, all of a sudden he's the champion, right? He's the top guy on the brand. He's the champ. Then he has an obligation to speak up against stuff like that. Now, maybe he pitched it. Maybe he pitched the idea himself. Maybe he thought it would be funny. But if he didn't, if Jinder was one of these people like, oh my God, like, I got to go out there and do this, then he had an obligation to speak up and not be afraid of his own shadow. You're the champ, buddy. You got to stand up, because if you don't, nobody else is going to. I have a lot of respect for guys who look at something and say, this doesn't make sense, or this is stupid, or this isn't funny. Let's change it. Let's tweak it. You know, Steve Austin, guys like that used to tell stories all the time. They'd be handed something and they would crumple it up and throw it away. Now, I understand that, you know, Sami Zayn is not Steve Austin. Jinder Mahal is not Steve Austin. But I would hope that guys have enough, you know, they have enough guts to speak up if there's something that they think is wrong or just has to be adjusted in some way. So I don't know where the truth lies, if it's a case of them speaking up and people just don't like it in WWE when you speak up and all of a sudden, oh, these guys have a reputation for being very difficult to work with. Or maybe they are. Maybe they are very difficult to work with. I don't know. But them being sent home from the tour obviously was a big deal. Now, my understanding is they're going to be back on TV this week for the planned match. It's supposed to be Owens and Zayn against New Day. I believe that match is going to happen. They're not suspended. They're not fired. They're not off TV. They're not a part of Survivor Series, although I assume that's just because they're going to cost Team SmackDown and Shane McMahon the match, unless plans have changed. But they will be on TV this week, and it'll be interesting to see if they do the job to New Day or not. New Day has a big match. If New Day wrestles The Shield, and I'll talk about that, then they have a big match for the pay-per-view. Owens and Zayn don't. So even if Owens and Zayn lose clean to the New Day on Tuesday, I'm almost inclined to say that they should. I don't know that I would do that. In fact, I wouldn't do that because Owens and Zayn, I mean, they're supposed to be a top act on the brand. And if they just keep getting beaten, I'm not really sure what sense that makes. If anything, I would have The Shield show up on TV on Tuesday and either just interfere for the DQ or cost New Day the match. And why would they do that? Well, because the New Day did the same thing to them on Raw last Monday. And that was the other big story and what led to some of these big changes here for the Survivor Series pay-per-view. It was Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose defending their Raw Tag Team titles last Monday against Sheamus and Cesaro in the main event. I thought they were having a really good match until the end. I thought the end of this was crap. I thought it ruined the whole match. Up to that point, they were having a hell of a match, but what happened is the New Day came out of the crowd with microphones, and they were talking, and they were distracting everybody. This went on for a good 5 minutes. So you gotta put yourself back in that situation from Monday, okay? The match is going on, New Day comes out, they start talking. There's no bell, because technically nobody's interfered in the match. The match is still going on. Sheamus and Cesaro were laying back. Rollins and Ambrose are distracted. They're looking up at the New Day. They're going, you know, back and forth. And after 5 minutes of this, Seth Rollins turns around and he gets bro kicked right in the face and pinned. It's almost like people forgot the match was still going on. That's how it ended. So I thought that was stupid. But Sheamus and Cesaro, new tag team champions. I'm looking at this and I'm going, they just took away the one match on this pay-per-view that I was actually genuinely interested in seeing. I was looking forward to seeing Rollins and Ambrose against the Usos. I thought that would be a hell of a match. And they took it away. Which is not to say that Sheamus and Cesaro against the Usos won't be a good match. I'm sure it will. But why would you do that? But then other changes happened, and again, I'm perfectly fine. I'm A-okay now with the changes that they've made to the Survivor Series card. I have no complaints. But at the time, you could see why I would be upset. Why would you take away the one match that a lot of people were looking forward to? Well, it certainly looks like they're setting up The Shield and The New Day for Survivor Series. I assume 3-on-3. I don't know, I don't know what other form that match would take other than a 6-man tag. And again, to me, the thing that would make the most sense is you have The Shield on this go home show going into the pay-per-view, invade, quote unquote, invade SmackDown and go after the New Day and either just have a big brawl or they can lay them out, go off the air doing the fist bump. We never did get to see Raw invade SmackDown. We saw SmackDown invade Raw. We never saw Raw invade SmackDown. So if they're going to do it, it's now or never. And that, to me, is the moment that would make sense for you to do it. The only question is, we know Roman Reigns is coming back to TV this week. Does he come back on Monday, or does he come back on Tuesday? I would almost think you just hold him off until SmackDown on Tuesday. Have him show up with the other two as a surprise, and just beat the hell out of the New Day. That's what I would do. So, a lot of big things happened this week. A lot of changes to the Survivor Series card, all for the better. There is one more, and that involves the women. There is a Team Raw versus Team SmackDown women's match at the pay-per-view. And according to PW Insider, I saw them have the story first. The belief, and this is kind of a spoiler for tomorrow night, so if you just don't want to be spoiled at all about what's going on with the women, anybody who's coming back, skip ahead. But the belief is that Paige is coming back to TV tomorrow. There was some talk about her maybe coming back to SmackDown, even though she was last on Raw. I guess plans changed again. She's going to be coming back to Raw. She will be the fifth and final member of the Raw women's team at Survivor Series, which, if that's the case, boy, does that say a lot about what they think of Bayley right now. So Paige being on Team Raw, I think, is actually a good thing. Paige, say what you want to about her, but she's a name. And she will add some star power to that Raw women's division, and she will add some star power to that match. Last time, we haven't seen her on TV. It's got to be over a year. Has to be. She had neck surgery, all the other shit that was going on with her. She was suspended in there somewhere, I think. So it's got to be every bit of a year, year and a half, probably, since we've seen this woman on TV. So her return is going to be a big deal. I don't know how the crowd's going to react. I don't know how they may or may not heckle her. I don't know. That'll be interesting to see. But the belief is that she will be on Team Raw at Survivor Series. And the fact is, you know, I hate to say it, but she is a bigger addition to that match than Bayley would be. Bayley, they got some work to do with her. They've got to build her back up. It's so unbelievable to me to see what they've done with this woman. As over and as popular as she was in NXT, even if she wasn't going to be quite at that level on the main roster, because it is a slightly different audience, there's no reason that Bayley, as popular as she was, should be in a position now where some weeks she's booed and other weeks there's just complete and total indifference to her when she comes out. It's amazing to see how they have beaten this girl down. And Paige coming back is a much bigger deal than it would be just to put Bayley in the match. That's just a fact. The other interesting thing about Paige, apparently she may be single again. Her friend posted a video, I guess, on Snapchat. It's like a 10-second clip of Paige. They're out at a restaurant or a bar somewhere. And Paige says, "This is why I'm single." And you can see in the background, and she's joking because in the background there's like another couple at the bar making out behind her. But she clearly says, "That's why I'm single now." And there's been rumors that the engagement was called off between her and Del Rio. I'll say this, if that's true, I hope it is, because that's the best thing that could possibly happen to that girl. You know, for her, if her injuries are behind her, and if she's newly single and doesn't have the baggage of being with him anymore, she can have a second lease on life here, you know, with her career. This could be a big second chance for her, because there were a lot of people that had her written off. Oh, she's never going to come back, or she'll end up dead, or this or that. There were a lot of really, negative scenarios for her, a lot of negative ways that this could have gone. The best thing for her would be to be away from him, to be injury-free, to have her head on straight, to come back, and to be put right back in a big role on TV. That, for her, would be the best thing that could happen. So, for her sake, I hope that's true. I hope that's the case. Alberto, ironically, is also back. I am going to talk a little bit about TNA here in a little bit. But if the two of them are Splitsville, I think for her sake, that's really the best thing that could have happened to her. Pete Dunne, favorite of mine, Pete Dunne, the WWE United Kingdom champion, made his Raw debut last week. Kurt Angle brought him out as an opponent for Enzo Amore. They were in Manchester. The place went nuts for him when he came out. He beat Enzo with the bitter end in about 3 minutes. So it was really cool to see him on Raw. I don't expect that to be a regular thing going forward. It was probably a one-time nice thing to do for the UK crowd. And the best place they could have done that with Pete Dunne, because if Pete Dunne comes out on Raw in the middle of, somewhere in Ohio, I don't see him getting the kind of reaction he got last Monday. So him coming out to that kind of reaction makes him feel like a big deal. The one thing I'm kind of bummed about is that they have made a match, apparently it's going to be a United Kingdom title match, at TakeOver in Houston next Saturday between Pete Dunne and Johnny Gargano, which you would think, shit, what's not to love? That's awesome. That's going to steal the show. Yeah, probably will. Problem is, it's not airing. It's not airing on TakeOver. It's either a dark match that we're never going to see, except for some NXT DVD 10 years from now, unreleased matches we've never seen before, or they may possibly be taping it for an upcoming episode of NXT television. I have not seen clarification on that one way or the other. As of right now, it's a dark match. We don't get to see it. And that sucks, because that's a match to look forward to. Maybe they'll change their mind. I don't think they probably will. So if you are going to Houston, you're in for a treat. You got a hell of a show coming up. But Gargano and Pete Dunne is not scheduled to air on TakeOver unless they make a change at some point this week. Just to follow up on one thing I mentioned on the last show, when I did the 10-year anniversary stream last week, I talked about Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho, and I made it very clear that without having all of the details about who knew what and when, I would be stunned beyond belief if Chris Jericho did not at least tip Vince McMahon off at least Vince, if not Vince and Triple H, about what he was doing. Not necessarily ask for his permission, because I figure Jericho's not under contract to them. He doesn't need their permission. It's not like he's asking for someone's hand in marriage or anything like that, but him and Vince seem to have a pretty close relationship. They text each other, stuff like that. So I would be stunned to find out that Chris Jericho did not tell Vince that, hey, I'm going to go do a big match here at the Tokyo Dome for this other wrestling company. And Kenny Omega, we found out this week, gave an interview to Tokyo Sports, which was translated. So I'm assuming the translation is correct and this was not mistranslated by somebody. But he did an interview with Tokyo Sports and said that Vince McMahon did indeed give Chris Jericho his blessing to go ahead and do the match. Again, not that he needed it, but that I guess Jericho told him, Vince said, go for it, and so Vince was, at least Vince, was aware of it. Maybe the rest of the company wasn't, and they were pissed off when they found out, but at least Vince McMahon was alerted, which is absolutely not a surprise to me at all, like I said. I would have been stunned to find out otherwise. There's no reason to think that Jericho would blindside him. He knows Vince McMahon better than most. I'm sure he would know well enough not to do that. If he had any aspirations of coming back to WWE, and we may well see him back in WWE. They've got a 25th anniversary Raw special coming up. They've got the Royal Rumble coming up. They've got WrestleMania coming up. I'd be shocked not to see Jericho on at least one of those things. Right? I mean, the thing with New Japan is just a one shot. So why burn a bridge? Why would he do that? At this stage of the game, at his age, the freedom he has, why would he do anything politically that he thinks might burn a bridge with WWE? It doesn't make sense. Of course he told Vince. So, that according to Kenny Omega. Impact Wrestling. There are some notes on Impact here. The reviews that I saw for last Sunday's Bound for Glory pay-per-view were not great. Especially that main event they had, Eli Drake and Johnny Impact, Johnny Mundo. They were having a good match, but then it went to hell with Alberto El Patron's interference, and all of a sudden it was like every overbooked TNA pay-per-view main event ever. From back during the Jeff Jarrett era when he was on top. Alberto, right back in the main event picture in Impact Wrestling. Hopefully this time he won't embarrass the company by talking about WWE all the time. He couldn't help himself. He was the champion before. He was the face of the company. He was the face of the brand. And he just would not shut up about WWE. And I'm not talking of like interviews outside, like at the shows. He would grab the house mic and just go off on WWE and Big Nose Triple H and Vince McMahon and all of this stuff. And it's like, dude, what are you doing? It was embarrassing. I almost felt bad for Impact. But they made him the champion, so I can only feel so much sympathy for them. But there he is, he's back, and back in the main event picture. And what was most embarrassing, though, wasn't even that. It was a tweet that was posted by a local casting agency in Ottawa, which said they were seeking paid background actors, non-union only. Uh-oh. I'm surprised somebody didn't set up the giant inflatable rat outside the building. I see that all the time here around the city. They usually set these giant inflatable rats outside businesses that employ non-union labor. And then you have like four people out there with signs, you know, and people just, you know, walk by them. Because we see it so often here in the city. I'm sure like in certain parts of the country or up in Canada, if you saw a giant inflatable rat that was probably viewable from outer space, you would stop and like look at it and maybe go over and find out what's going on. In New York, we see it so often that we kind of expect it. It's almost like a part of our culture now. We just walk right by it. But the request from the casting agency was for 50 to 75 audience members per day for each of the 3 days of tapings that followed Bound for Glory. $12.50 an hour was the going rate. 4 hours total each day. So $12.50, and I, like many other people, I'm sure, tried to work out the math, and I admit math is not my first subject, but, you know, $12.50 an hour times 4 hours, that's $50. 50 multiplied by 3 days of work, that's $150 per person, in theory, for somebody who came to all three nights, right? And that's $7,500 or more that Anthem would have paid for this. They can't afford referees, but they can pay people to come watch their show. It said all ages, bring friends and family. You may be given signs to hold. You are encouraged to look at wrestlers on the Impact Wrestling website and create signs for those wrestlers. That would be very helpful, it says. And you will get more FaceTime on TV. You will get to sit in the audience and watch a thrilling night of wrestling provided to you by Impact. So they paid people to attend their TV tapings this week. Some, not all. They didn't pay everybody. 50 to 75 people is not a lot of people, but they did pay people. And to the people saying, well, you know, they're not the first company to do such a thing, that may well be true. I'm not sure older promotions had to pay people to sit in on those old studio shows. I don't know that for a fact. I don't think they did. Lucha Underground, I'm not sure if they've paid people before. They may have. But what makes this worse is that those companies, those aren't companies that have been operating for 15 years. And Lucha Underground is not really a company, but you get what I'm saying. They haven't been in operation for a decade, for 12 years, for 15 years. Impact, okay? Impact Wrestling, under more names than Ed Leslie has had in his career, has been around for 15 years. And after 15 years, they're running their biggest show of the year from a dining hall and paying people to come to their shows. I mean, I've used the hamster on a wheel analogy for them before, and it still rings true, now more than ever. Although, I am convinced that WWE does a similar thing with those people we always see in the front row at every show. Like, literally, every single show, every Raw, every pay-per-view, it's the same group of people on the hard camera side in the first couple of rows. There's the long-haired guy with his mother. How can he afford to fly all over the country every week for these shows? Only if they're paying him. I'm convinced of this. There's another guy who's always wearing this neon green shirt who's got kind of like a goatee thing going on. There's a couple of other ones too. They either work for the company or they're hired out by them. It's the only explanation for this. So they don't get off easy too because there's something going on there with WWE. But anyway, at the TV tapings in Ottawa, Jeremy Borash announced that Impact is now officially a Canadian company and would be based there going forward. This was a move that was expected, given that Anthem is based out of Toronto, so it was only a matter of time they would move out of Nashville and just sort of upend all of their operations and move them up north, which is apparently what they're doing. I assume this means either fewer tapings or no tapings at all anymore from Universal Studios in the Impact Zone in Orlando, but again, they haven't said, you know, one way or the other. I'm not so sure that getting out of the Impact Zone is the worst move for them. You know, things tend to get kind of stale after a while. You're in the same place all the time. I mean, that works for Lucha Underground. I love the temple. I love that setting. I don't want them to move out of the temple or anything like that. But I don't know. I mean, the Impact Zone, again, it's been 15 years. There's a sameness to it. I think it technically is a different soundstage now, but it all just looks the same. So I don't know that getting out of there is the worst thing in the world for them. But here's the problem. Like, they may end up finding a place up north, whether it's Ottawa or Toronto, or Saskatchewan, or Manitoba, or wherever, that doesn't look as good, that isn't as big, doesn't have as many people. It may be a lot harder for them to get people in there unless they pay them. Maybe that's their new plan. We'll just pay people every week to come to these tapings. So we have to see how it plays out. But paying extras to fill in the seats is not something that is a sustainable model for them. One time, okay, fine. But if it becomes the norm, I don't see how spending money on that does them any good. James Storm, one of the longest tenured members of the Impact roster, has officially left the company. He gave his farewell speech at the tapings this week. He decided not to extend his deal with Impact. That was his choice. For all the people who were leaving, some of them not of their own choosing, this was his choice. What his plans may be, he has not said. He has said in the past that Triple H left the door open for him to come back to NXT for a proper run after he wrestled a few matches there before. I think he had two matches there. I don't know if the interest would still be there in him. He's an older guy. I think he could be a solid hand to have on that NXT roster, kind of working with the younger guys. I don't really see a spot for him on the main roster in WWE, unless they want to do like a beer money reunion. And to be perfectly honest with you, Bobby Roode, while I am not a fan of babyface Bobby Roode, that has to change like yesterday. But Bobby Roode is above that. At this point, Bobby Roode is so far above and beyond the beer money shit. He doesn't need that. And WWE has not always been so open to keeping old tag teams and old acts together from other promotions. I mean, they did with Red Dragon in NXT. Fish and O'Reilly are together again. But on the main roster, I don't see it happening. There was another departure as well from Impact. There have been a lot of them lately. Not just the three referees from last week. It's like everybody seems to be... They're shedding their skin like a snake, this company. Another one is Bram, who hasn't really been used in a long time. And really, all this means is that it officially kills the Bram meme. That's officially dead. The one where he re-signs a gazillion times with Impact Wrestling. I guess there's only so many contracts one person can re-sign with the same company before you finally run out of paper. I guess the printer had a paper jam, and so Bram decided it was time to move on. The guy's got talent. Remember, he was one of the original members of the Ascension. Who knows how far they might have gone had they not have, ditched him for Rick Victor. Maybe they wouldn't be doing comedy skits right now on SmackDown. And they didn't ditch him for Rick Victor. I mean, he had an issue with a police officer that he assaulted. He got fired, and Victor got plugged into the Ascension team. So the fact is, this guy's got baggage. I know there was some domestic violence claims against him. I think the charges were dropped. But even beyond the domestic violence, I mean, there's been other, incidents with this guy. Like the one that got him fired in the first place from WWE. I can't see them touching him. He's got baggage. And if he does have aspirations of going back there, maybe he doesn't. Maybe he just wants to go work indies or find some other promotion in the UK to go work for. But if he does have aspirations of going back to WWE, I don't see it happening. Lucha Underground. This was the news that really perked me up after my rough week. Lucha Underground Season 4, which has been a source of great mystery now for a number of months, is a mystery no more. It is now officially confirmed. The press release is out. They put a teaser video out, narrated by Johnny Mundo, running down all of his accomplishments from each of the first three seasons of the show. And it ended with him saying that in Season 4, I take back what's mine. Welcome to Slamtown. And it ends with a message that says, coming 2018. I saw the press release they put out. It says that production will begin out in Los Angeles early next year. This is great news. You guys know I'm a big fan. Big Mark, whatever. Big fan of Lucha Underground. I love the show. I've watched all three seasons of the show. I have my own opinions on which seasons were better than the other. But I thoroughly enjoy the show. It's a nice departure from the typical wrestling that we see from WWE or Impact or really anybody. I mean, the whole look and feel of the show is so different than what we're used to seeing. And that's one of the things I like about it. That and the fact that I have grown to like a lot of the characters on the show. I think Johnny Mundo, he kills it on the show. I really, I'm a big fan of his work. We know how talented he is, but he had the chance for the first time on a national stage. I know the audience for El Rey is not large, but the first time really to carry a brand or a show on his own as the champion. And I thought, the work he was doing, he was killing it. But him and Pentagon and Mil Muertes and Katrina and all of them, I've just, become a big, big fan of the product they put out and a lot of the characters and a lot of the storytelling. And it'll be interesting to see who comes back and who doesn't, because there have been a lot of people who have wanted out of their contracts, some of whom are not coming back to Lucha Underground, Prince Puma being one of them, or have had falling out with the people who run the show. And obviously Mundo is going to be back because he was in the teaser, and I guess he can do Lucha and Impact, I guess, because there's a working agreement there with AAA, so that's how he's able to do that. Pentagon, you would think, will be back since he's the champion. He better be back. Hopefully Dario Cueto is not really dead, because that would seriously suck the life out of the show, I think, if he wasn't around. I'm hoping they got the funding they needed so they don't have to really strip the show down too much and they can still film at the temple and not have to find some other place to tape TV. I really hope the show doesn't really look and feel much different than we're used to it looking and feeling. But we don't know how different it may be. I'm just happy it's coming back. That's one of the best pieces of news I got all week. Put a smile on my face. And hopefully, hopefully it won't be too long before we're able to see it. I mean, if they're first taping it in the early part of next year, we don't know what that means. Are they taping in January? Are they taping in April? Whenever it is, it's probably many more months before it actually hits TV. It could very well be summer or fall of 2018 before we even see it again. So I think we're still a ways off from actually seeing Lucha Underground back on TV. But at least we know it's coming back. That's very cool. Very cool to hear. I did want to just comment a little bit on the Ric Flair 30 for 30 special on ESPN. I watched it when it aired on Tuesday night. I didn't realize it was 90 minutes long. I figured, oh, this will be a cool way to spend an hour. And then I saw it went to 11:30. I said, wow, okay. But you know what? Even in those 90 minutes, how can you possibly fit Ric Flair's career and his life in 90 minutes? I thought they did as good a job as could be expected, given the limited amount of time that they had. They, for example, you know, they covered the plane crash in 1975. I mean, there were people who died in that plane crash, other wrestlers who passed away. And it's a pretty epic story. I mean, Flair talks about it in his book, and I mean, we've heard it told, you know, many times before. But I was kind of hoping they would go into more detail about that. That's just one thing, one observation. The other observation is, you come away from this special thinking, A, Ric Flair is in fact the greatest professional wrestler of all time. And it's hard to argue that he's not. I think when you really look at his overall body of work, the length of his career, the quality of his work, how many people mimic him and do impressions of him and try to be him and model themselves and their style and their promo style after him, the influence that he's had on the business, it's hard to say that Ric Flair is not the greatest of all time. I'd certainly have no problem calling him the greatest. Hulk Hogan on the special called him the greatest. But you know what? What Hulk says, Hulk's an interesting one because it's hard to take anything he says seriously. I mean, God bless the guy, but you know, he's a worker. He came out of the womb working. Okay, he'll go to his grave as a worker. It's hard to know when he's actually being honest or if he's just sort of kissing ass and trying to come off as, oh, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to work. And you know, Ric Flair, he's the greatest. I always wanted to be like him. And it was a nice thing for him to say. It's just hard for me to really buy into whatever he says. And honestly think that in his mind, he doesn't think that he himself is the best. But he said a lot of very complimentary, very nice things about Ric Flair. And there were a lot of honest points that he made. He admitted that he only had a certain, you know, type of match that he was used to doing. And you know, how giving Flair was of himself and Flair putting him over. Because Flair put him over all the time. I mean, I'm not saying there wasn't any match that Flair beat Hogan. I'm sure he beat Hogan at least once in WCW. But when I think back to all the matches they had there, it's always Hulk beating Flair. It didn't matter if Hulk was the babyface and Flair was the heel. If Flair was the babyface and Hulk was the heel in the NWO. It was always Hogan kicking this guy's ass and making him look like a jackass. You know, but all of a sudden, he's all very complimentary of Flair and this and that. Okay, fine. But the one thing, besides the fact that Rick comes across as, you know, the greatest pro wrestler of all time, is how, and he's honest about this, how awful he was at being a husband and a father. And, you know, you talk about neglecting your kids. He's unabashedly honest about all of this during the special. He just says, I couldn't do it. And his ex-wife, you know, he would come home and he would say, I'm bored, I can't be here. And he would leave and go to Greg Valentine's house. It's like, I have the trophy wife at home and I have the kids and I did all the things you're supposed to do as a grown-up, responsible adult, except that I'm not grown up and I'm not responsible. And I'm just going to leave and go do what I want and have fun and drink and carouse and the hell with everybody else. And that's a shitty husband and a shitty father. And they didn't hide that. They didn't sugarcoat it. They didn't. This was not like a whitewashing of Ric Flair's history, the way the WWE whitewashes things with the Ultimate Warrior. That's not what this was. This, I thought, overall was a pretty honest portrayal, the good and the bad of Ric Flair's life and career and him as a human being and how flawed he is. And then you come away from the special with your own thoughts, you know? Can you support the guy knowing how awful he was with how he, you know, treated his wife and wasn't there for his kids and all that kind of stuff? I mean, does that just not bother you? Does it change your impression of him in any way? That's for everybody to decide on their own. I don't think it changes the fact that, you know, he was obviously the best at what he did and very entertaining and had great matches. So I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought that you could probably do another 90 minutes plus and still not get to all of the, you know, important things about his career. When they covered the 1992 Royal Rumble win, you can imagine the smile that came across my face. I got a lot of messages about that. Yes, that was one of my favorite parts of the special. You are correct. So I liked it. And it is streaming, by the way, online. So if you missed it and you want to go back and watch it, ESPN is streaming it, I think, through their website. So that's the place to go to check it out. Is it worth it? Yeah, I think it is. I think it's absolutely worth taking 90 minutes out of your day to go watch it. It's very, very good. They did splice in a very quick update from the director of the documentary about his health issues in the last few months. You could tell, like, it wasn't like they tacked an extra 5 or 10 minutes on the end to cover it. They didn't really cover it that much. It was literally just an insert in the middle of the documentary, like, oh, an update. And just explaining to you very briefly that he had this health issue and he's doing better now. And then let's get back to the show. Like, that sort of thing. At least they put something in there. I felt like, how can you not address that? And they did, but it was very brief, so I wouldn't watch this expecting some sort of huge update on his recent medical woes and his condition. But as a 90-minute special, I thought it was very, very well done, and again, that was the one thing that really surprised me, I guess, in a pleasant way, was they didn't whitewash this guy's career. He is what he is. Oh, there was one other thing I really enjoyed about this, the animations. I don't know if I'm the only one who felt that way. They had, as Flair would tell stories, it wasn't like it for every single story, but for a lot of stories, they had this company, I guess, that they used, do animations, like reenactments of these things. I don't know, just like the way the animation was done, I enjoyed it. I really liked it. I thought it added a lot to the documentary. So overall, I give it a thumbs up. This past Thursday marked the 20-year anniversary of the Montreal Screwjob, which I'm sure is a subject that many of you are sick to death of hearing about, so I won't spend too much time on this. But it is the 20-year anniversary. That is a big milestone. It has to be mentioned. I'm still convinced they're going to try some kind of screwjob finish at Survivor Series in some way, because it's Survivor Series, and it's 20 years since Montreal. How could they not? How could they help themselves and not try to recreate the freaking screwjob finish for one of those matches at the pay-per-view next weekend? I'm sure they will. But one of the most, you know, game-changing events in the history of pro wrestling. Easily the most famous match in the history of certainly modern-day pro wrestling. I can't think of another single match unless you want to go like Ali and... was it Ali and Monsoon, I think it was? Or Ali Inoki, was it Andre? Let's see here. I'm trying to think. There was one match where Andre's legs were destroyed. It might have been with Inoki. I mean, there have been a lot of famous matches that you can point to in the history of wrestling, but none that I think are as famous and still talked about to this day as this match between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels in Montreal back in 1997. And so you think back to all of the events that came out of this. Bret Hart screwed, right? Out of WWE. He was on his way out anyway, but he went out on very, very poor terms. And it certainly affected his life. I think for a long time he was very bitter about that. You can understand why. At some point, you hope you get to a point where you can get past it and just get beyond it already. But look, if you were in Bret Hart's shoes and you work for the same company and the same employer for 13, 14 years, put your heart and soul into it, took it as seriously as he did, probably more seriously than he should have, which is one of his own character flaws when it comes to this. But, you know, they pull something on you like that. They embarrass you in front of your family and your friends and your hometown fans, right? And all that kind of stuff. And of all people, with one of the people that you absolutely hate the most in life, right? And they do to you what they did to him. And that's the send-off that you get after all these years. You don't even get the watch. Remember the Dusty Rhodes promo? The worker who gets replaced by a computer and gets a gold watch and a kick in the ass? He didn't even get the gold watch. He just got kicked in the ass. He got kicked in the crotch. How would you feel if you were in his shoes? You probably wouldn't feel too good about it. Then you go to WCW and all the dysfunction over there. You're not the number one guy anymore. You're part of the shit show that's going on over there. All the politics and all the backstabbing and all the BS. And a company that just doesn't know what it's doing. You know, Brett has made it very clear he's not fond of Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff has made it very clear, I should say, that he's not fond of Bret Hart. There's, to this day, in fact, there was something Bischoff and Brett were going back and forth only a few weeks ago. In 2017. Those two do not like each other. A lot of sniping going on back and forth. But to go from what happened in Montreal to his brother dying in the way he did in 99, Bill Goldberg, the errant kick to the head, ending his career. Bret Hart was Mr. Wrestling. I mean, this is all this guy knew. It was in his family, for God's sakes, going back to his dad. And I mean, for that to happen to him at a time when, yeah, he was older, but he still had a lot of good years left in him. And to find out that your career is over. It's over prematurely because somebody else was reckless and careless and kicked you in the head. Working for a company, by the way, that you didn't even like, you didn't even care for. And then a couple of years after that, he's riding his bike, he hits a pothole, he hits his head. I'm sure that the kick to the head and the concussions and all that had something to do with the stroke that he suffered. I mean, if that kick from Goldberg doesn't happen, I'm no doctor here, but I'm guessing that there's a pretty good chance he doesn't end up having the stroke that he had in 2002. But regardless, he has a stroke. All of these awful things that happened to this guy, and then other family members passed away from drugs and other issues. You know, the guy had a rough, you know, life in the years since what happened to him in Montreal. It was almost like a downward spiral. And then he found peace, finally, with WWE. He found a new wife. Now his kids are all grown up. They have grandkids now. It seems like Bret actually is at a point now where he's happier. You know, we still get grumpy Bret Hart when you read, like, some of his interviews and stuff, but he's finally at a point in his life where he's happier and, you know, has his family situation in order. He's on good terms with WWE, and it's good to see. I'm happy that Bret was able to at least find peace and happiness after so many years of bad luck and bitterness, a lot of which is, frankly, understandable. So Bret's life and his career was not the same, clearly, after Montreal. Shawn Michaels, you know, I mean, I don't think what happened in Montreal would have changed his physical situation as far as his back breaking down, him probably having to take time away. You know, I think that would have happened regardless. But what it did for WWE, it really helped birth that Mr. McMahon character, who I maintain is the greatest heel in pro wrestling history. That Mr. McMahon character, in its prime, is the best wrestling heel of all time. Ric Flair, great heel. Roddy Piper, great heel. You can put together a top 10, a top 20, top 50 of the greatest heels in wrestling history. Had a lot of names on there. I put Mr. McMahon at the top of that list. He was so damn great. Almost scary, right? You think, well, this can't be how the real guy is. I wonder about that. I wonder about that. I think there was a lot of the real Vince McMahon, frankly, you know, shining through with that Mr. McMahon character. So it birthed the Mr. McMahon character, which obviously, you know, McMahon versus Austin was huge for WWE in 98. It's hard to see how WWE didn't benefit from what happened to Bret Hart in Montreal. I think they, you know, without that happening, I don't want to say that they would have died. WCW would have won the war. I think things pretty much would have settled in where they ended up settling in. Maybe it would have been delayed by a little bit. Maybe they wouldn't have been as successful. I think they would have been okay. But it certainly launched that company into the stratosphere the following year. It set the stage. It set the plate for them to go on to do bigger and better things and become this gigantic multi-million dollar company that they did and help put their competition out of business and all of these things. It certainly benefited Vince a lot more than it did Bret. And to this day, there are still people who say it's a work. Scott Hall, I think, is one of those people who, you know, are of the belief that it was all just a work. I've never bought into that. I don't buy it. I still don't buy it. I still think it's a nonsense argument. Unless you can provide me with actual evidence, the smoking gun. Show me a handshake or a hug backstage that night. But it's going to take a whole hell of a lot to convince me that this was anything but what it was. And what it was an unfortunate set of circumstances. It should never have happened. But it did. Triple H played a vital role in it. You know, as people have retold the story about the, you know, the conference call with Vince and Shawn and Triple, or meeting or whatever it was that Vince and Triple H and Shawn had, I think the Wednesday before. And, you know, Shawn was just a mess. He was a bubbling mess. He was crying. Okay, okay, I'll do whatever. And Triple H is like, no, no, you stand your ground. This guy's going to another company. He's going to the competition. You can't let him walk out with the championship. You've got to, you know, we got to do something about this. And that was kind of what set things in motion ultimately for the screw job and for what happened to Brett in Montreal. So Triple H played a very important role in all of this. You know, it's just, it's one of those things that I don't want to say I'm glad it happened, but you look at what ended up happening and it really did help launch WWE into that next level. And, you know, Bret Hart, what can I say? You know, Bret was never the same after that. It would have been nice for him to leave on good terms and have his run with WCW, and if he wasn't happy, quit and come back and have matches with Kurt Angle and John Cena and Randy Orton and all of these things that we never had a chance to see. Because if Bret comes back, if he's on good terms, if he doesn't get hurt, he doesn't get kicked in the head by Goldberg, if these things don't happen, he's got at least a few more solid years left of big matches coming back to WWE in 2001, 2002, whenever his contract would have been up. That would have been a big deal to see Bret Hart at WrestleMania have a match against, imagine at WrestleMania 18. Imagine this, if you will. And this was a very doable, a very possible scenario here. That if Bret Hart leaves WWE on better terms, if he goes out the right way, whatever that way is, goes to WCW, doesn't have such a good run, is already plotting his exit, is already plotting his big return, his big homecoming to WWE, because I think he signed a 3-year deal, which means his deal would have been up around 2000, 2001, he would have probably been free and clear to leave WCW. Okay? Now imagine, if you will, in 2002, WrestleMania is in Toronto. WrestleMania is in Canada. Bret Hart, his first WrestleMania match back in WWE in Canada against Kurt Angle. Because Kurt Angle had a throwaway match against Kane. It wasn't even like Kurt had a big WrestleMania match that year. It was just like a throwaway match on the undercard. But imagine Bret Hart and Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 18 in Toronto. How great would that have been? Would have been incredible. I know it's a what-if scenario, but timeline-wise, it kind of matches up. We could very well have gotten that match. That's what I regret about that whole situation the most, is that we didn't get the chance to see Bret Hart, a healthy Bret Hart, come back and have matches with some of those guys and have like another nice big run in WWE before he called it quits. And then he could have retired and become a commissioner or something like that. All these things, by the way, he ended up doing. He did end up coming back. He did end up wrestling again, although they weren't real matches, but whatever. He came back, he wrestled. He did, for a cup of coffee, he was the GM on TV for like maybe a couple of months or whatever it was. But, you know, that was many, many years later. He was much older. Not the same Bret Hart. I wish we would have had that chance in the early part of the decade to be able to see him come back and have that one last run. So, it's a match I'm sure we're going to be talking about when it hits 25 and 30 years. It's a match people are going to be talking about probably long after we're gone. That's how popular it is. And the more we talk about it, the more we keep it in people's consciousness. And see, I've already talked about it more longer than I wanted to. But anyway, I couldn't do a podcast here on the 20th anniversary of this thing without, you know, at least acknowledging it in some way. And you know, the what might have been scenarios and the whole work for a shoot. Again, you're never going to convince me it was anything but a shoot, an unfortunate one, but one that will live on in infamy. All right, let me do a couple of mailbag questions here, just so I can at least get to a few of them for you. See, and it's funny, I said I'm only going to do a short show this week, and here I am, an hour and 20 in. So always happens. I don't even know why I bother saying it. I may as well just do it. Whatever it is, it is. But there was so much to cover this week, I just couldn't bring myself not to do a show. And I'm doing okay. So far, I'm doing okay right now. Oh my God. Actually, I'm not doing okay. But My voice is still not all there, and I got some tightness in my chest, but I'm not in pain, so that's the most important thing. But again, if you have questions, you can email them to me. The Solomonster at gmail.com is the email address, as always. This I thought was a timely question, and one that I thought was worth mentioning here. This comes from Sash from Boston. After watching the recent 30 for 30 on Ric Flair, do you think it's only a matter of time before Flair and other wrestlers are accused of sexual harassment or assault? Stories of Flair exposing himself, plane rides where drunken girls have their heads shaved and breasts grabbed by different wrestlers. With what's happening in Hollywood, it seems only a matter of time before wrestlers will have their reputations destroyed as a result. If I'm a wrestler, especially a legend, one who's been around for a very long time, 30, 40 year career, or if I'm a high profile wrestler right now on TV, and if there are in fact stories that people, male or female, because this goes both ways, if there are stories that I know people can tell about me, I'm very nervous right now with everything that's been going on. Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. I think it's only a matter of time before some people have their reputations destroyed. I'm not saying Flair is going to be one of those people per se. You could, you know, in your mind figure, well, this guy's been around for so long, all the stories about him, thousands of women, you know, there could be something in there. There could be, but we don't know. I'm not saying it's going to be Flair. It could be any number of people. And if in fact they are guilty of the things that they are accused of, especially if it's really serious stuff, then whoever they are, they deserve whatever they have coming to them. They should be nervous. They should live in fear. I'm talking like the really serious stuff, like you mentioned assault. That's not something that should ever be excused. That's not something there should ever be a statute of limitations on. The problem is, you're always going to have opportunistic people out there who see what's going on. Oh, all these stories of sexual harassment and misconduct are coming out. I want to get in on this. And then they're going to look to take advantage of it. And there could very well be some people who spread lies just either for the attention, to try to get a payday, to try to, you know, get paid off to shut up, whatever the case may be. And they could ruin lives. They could ruin reputations of innocent people. For all the guilty people, all the disgusting people, all the pedos, all the people who absolutely deserve to be outed. And if they did something, I hope they are outed. For all those people, there could very well be some people who are innocent, who say they're innocent and actually mean it and are actually telling the truth. And unfortunately, all it takes is one allegation, and that could be the end of you. That's where we are at this point. If you're a celebrity, it's something that you need to be worried about. It's not a, you know, innocent before guilty thing anymore. That's not how it works. Not in the court of public opinion. So if you are a famous person, if you are an actor, if you are a singer, if you are a celebrity of any kind, you have to be worried about that. It's not a fair system. And it's why, as somebody, and I've, you know, mentioned to you guys, like, I work with my full-time job, I work in public relations. I don't do this for a living. I wish I could. I wish I could support myself by doing a whole bunch of wrestling podcasts. But I have a full-time job to help pay the bills. And what I do in my life is I work in public relations. And so my advice to those people would be very simple. And I've had conversations even with coworkers about this. We've talked about this. My advice would be very simple. There is a very easy way to avoid having that happen to you if you are one of the people who are accused of doing something like that for which you are truly innocent. If you are absolutely being perfectly honest, I did not do this, or I have never met this woman, or I have never met this man, I don't know what they're talking about, they have an agenda, I'm innocent, all right, okay, perfect, fine. Here's what you do. You offer to take a lie detector test. That's it. You come out, you say, I didn't do this. I did not do this. And I am willing to take a lie detector test anytime, anywhere, under proper supervision, whatever authority or lawyers need to oversee it, let's do it. Let's set it up. You pick the day, you pick the time, I will be there. And you take a lie detector test. Because if you're telling the truth, you have nothing to worry about. And I know, like, lie detector tests are not admissible in court and all that kind of stuff, but there is nothing more powerful than offering to take a lie detector test in a situation like that. That's what you do. I see, like, some of these people, we're hearing so many stories now. The floodgates have opened. Politicians, celebrities being accused of all these awful things. There's this other dodo who was accused of inappropriate contact with a 14-year-old girl when he was, like, a district attorney or something in his 30s. And I see this interview the other night, and these wishy-washy answers, and I'm like, oh, God. The slimy people. If somebody accused me of doing something like that, I would be very vehement in that, no, I did not do this. I would not be like, well, you know, generally I don't do that sort of thing, or I don't really recall. Yeah, it's kind of funny how people's memories get very fuzzy when you ask them certain questions, but yet they have details of other specific times and dates on things, like selective memory, that kind of thing. You can't leave any question about it. You can't give wishy-washy answers about these things. It's very cut and dry. It's black and white. Yes or no? Believe me, I would remember something like that if somebody accused me of doing something like that. I would remember. And if I did, I'd be really worried. But if I didn't, it sucks. It's a shitty situation to be in. But there's a very simple answer that you give. And that's it. Unfortunately, you have a lot of guys out there who are not so innocent, and they flail around like fish, and they make things worse. I don't know who these people are giving them advice to go out and talk about this, because they only make it worse for themselves. And so to think that wrestlers aren't at some point possibly going to be accused of similar things, because this isn't going away. This is not a problem that's going to go away in a couple of weeks or a month. It's like the floodgates have opened. And all these people who were afraid or, you know, didn't want to make waves or I don't want to cause problems for my family, people are going to come after me, they're going to threaten me. All of a sudden, people are rising up, they're coming out, they're making all these accusations. And I don't know, you know, fact from fiction, which ones are real and which ones are not. I like to think I'm pretty good when I see how people react to these things in determining who's probably telling the truth and who isn't. But again, I think you're being naive if you don't think that this could and probably will at some point happen to a prominent pro wrestler, or maybe even several prominent pro wrestlers. And if you are one of those pro wrestlers and you are guilty of doing something you should not have done that is of a serious nature, then yeah, you ought to be worried. Let's see here. W.S. Fletcher from Philadelphia. I've been hearing a lot of rumors about Hulk Hogan and WWE wanting to bring back Hogan. That is a very unsettling thing to me. Do you know if Hulk has ever reached out or worked with the NAACP or the Urban League? I know the majority of fans don't think this is an important thing anymore, but being African American, to me, it is important. It's not enough for me personally to just apologize and then do absolutely nothing. I never felt he was contrite in his apology. He was upset he got caught and called out for it. I guess I speak for that small segment of the population that now views Hulk Hogan as nothing but a bigot. I just hope they don't try to whitewash what he did the way they did with the Ultimate Warrior, because that would really turn me off. To my knowledge, he has not. I'm positive that Hogan, of all people, the master promoter that he is, if Hogan was going to reach out or do an event or give money to or do something with a group like the NAACP or the Urban League, I'm sure that we would have heard about it. There probably would have been a big press release and a big photo op. I don't recall any announcement of him doing any sort of outreach or work with any of those organizations. I've heard him apologize a million times. Otherwise, he has laid low for a few years now. He has kept a very low profile, probably just waiting it out, hoping that people either forget or it sort of, dims over time and people have forgiveness in their hearts, and then just waiting for the right moment to come back, because I have no doubt that he'll be back in WWE very soon. I thought he would already be back by now, I'll be honest with you. I thought he was back at WrestleMania this year. I was very, very surprised that they did not bring him back. They had already, before WrestleMania, he had already been, you heard his voice in voiceovers on TV, like they were starting to slowly bring him back, and it was the, you know, WrestleMania 33. You know, the big anniversary, 30th anniversary of him slamming Andre. I thought, wow, how can you not have Hulk Hogan make a big comeback at WrestleMania? If they were going to do it, I thought it would have happened, and I was very surprised it didn't. But I still feel it's inevitable very soon he's going to be back. But as far as him making outreach, again, to my knowledge, I can't tell you he didn't do it in private or in secret. I can't see him not wanting to publicize something like that. But I have not heard of him doing anything at all on that front. One more here. Drew in L.A. Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart always seems to be talked about among the greatest feuds ever, but it seems to me their feud had much more to do with the real-life heat they had with each other and not so much the quality of the matches themselves. I'm not saying the matches were bad, but I've heard you say you found their Iron Man match to be overrated, and I'm inclined to agree. They had the Survivor Series 97 match that is known more for the screw job than anything else. I know they also had a match at Survivor Series 92 that I have admittedly not seen, but that seems more like a throwaway match. Can you think of any Bret Shawn matches that you would consider classics, or do you find their feud to be overrated based on the quality of the matches themselves? I don't find the feud to be overrated at all. I think the entire basis of the feud is the real-life heat between the two of them. I think that's where the feud comes from. If you're telling me, just from an in-ring perspective, we've never really had a true Bret Hart Shawn Michaels classic, I think a lot of people would disagree with you because a lot of people love that Iron Man match they had at WrestleMania 12. I thought it was a good match, but I wouldn't say I loved it. I do think it's overrated by people. I don't even think it's the best Iron Man match. I've made that very clear. I mean, I had more fun watching Rock and Triple H. That's my personal favorite Iron Man match of all the ones we've seen in WWE. I mean, Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar had a better wrestling match, their match on SmackDown in 03, but I had more fun from start to finish watching the Rock Triple H one from Judgment Day in 2000. So it's not even the best Iron Man match I think the WWE has ever produced, but it's the first one, and it's Bret and Shawn. And so I do think that there is an element here of some people romanticizing it, but then you also have people who genuinely liked it, and that's their opinion, and they're entitled to it. The first thing you need to do is you need to watch the Survivor Series match from 92. You said you didn't see it, you need to see it. I think on its own, independent of any real-life heat or storyline, because that was a very unique situation. Forget the real-life heat that came many years later. There wasn't even any build-up to that match, hardly at all. I mean, I guess there was a little bit. I know there was a face-to-face promo they had on, like, Saturday Night's Main Event, the last Saturday Night's Main Event ever, in October of 92. But beyond that, I don't remember there being any build at all to that match, because plans changed. When the Ultimate Warrior got fired, it was supposed to be Savage and Warrior against Ric Flair and Razor Ramon, and it was going to be... I think Bulldog originally was going to defend the Intercontinental title against the Mountie, I think, or either the Mountie or Rick Martel. I forgot what the original match was supposed to be. Bulldog got fired. He got busted, as Warrior did, I think, getting HGH or GH or whatever from overseas. And this was at a time when Vince was getting very, very serious about cracking down on that kind of stuff because the FBI and the government was breathing down his neck. And so Bulldog dropped the belt to Shawn Michaels, which was not the original plan, but they had to get the belt off him. So all of a sudden, Shawn Michaels, in October of 92, becomes the Intercontinental Champion. Bret Hart, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, in October of 1992, becomes the WWF Champion. So it's funny, when you look back on their careers, the same year, the same month, within just weeks of each other, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels are the two beneficiaries of what happened to the Ultimate Warrior and the British Bulldog. They are the two beneficiaries of those two guys getting busted for steroids. All of a sudden, the Survivor Series card is changed, kind of like it was now here in 2017. All of a sudden, not too long before the pay-per-view, the Survivor Series card is changed for the better. I don't know if it was changed for the better back then or not. I mean, I think Warrior and Savage against Flair and Ramon would have been a big match. But it was, I guess you could argue, changed for the better in terms of we got a Bret Hart Shawn Michaels match that went from being just, I think, a straight singles match with nothing on the line to being champion against champion in the main event for the WWF title. And I thought that match was actually really good. I think that match doesn't get talked about enough because when you think of Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels as Survivor Series, you don't think of 1992, you think of 1997. Or you think of the Iron Man match. People don't talk about the match they had in 92. They don't talk about the ladder match they had, which was on a Coliseum video back in 92 for the Intercontinental title. I can't sit here and tell you that that match is a... I can't call that match a classic. They had a good ladder match. It was one of the earliest ladder matches, if not the earliest, that WWF ever did. Long before the Shawn Razor one in 94. I thought that was a good match. I thought their Survivor Series in 92 match was really good stuff. Frankly, their match in 97 was going really well, too, until the finish. But that match wasn't going to have a good finish anyway, because had the screw job not have happened, the planned finish was going to be a run-in for a DQ anyway. So I think that match would have ended up being pretty good, but the finish was going to fuck that thing over no matter what. And then you have the Iron Man match. I don't think they had any other singles matches, to my knowledge, on TV. So you have a very small pool of matches to choose from. It's not like they had 5-10 matches together. And I think there is something to be said for that. I do think if you're just looking at it from an in-ring perspective, then yes. The idea of Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, you could argue, is overrated. Because they never really had what I would consider to be an all-out knockdown classic. That just never happened. Unless you are that much in love with the Iron Man match, which I'm not, I would argue the two of them never really had that one classic match before. But they had a bunch of really good matches. But that's not what Bret vs. Shawn was all about. Bret vs. Shawn really was all about the feud. It was about the back and forth, the promos, the stories, the real life heat, DX against the Hart Foundation. Like, that's really what that feud was all about. It was all about what happened, from 96 going into 97. And, if you base it on that, it's a classic feud. It's a memorable feud. If you base it on the matches, then it's maybe not as much of a classic. So we'll end there. I should probably get some rest here because I feel okay. I don't feel great, but I think we'll end there. We basically did a full show. So you guys got a full podcast as it turned out here this week. Even though I deviated, I didn't even watch NXT. But yet here we are. Pretty much going normal length here, maybe a little under. So I'm glad I was able to do this. I would have been really bummed out to not be able to talk about some of these things this week and to not do a show. Again, I have not missed a show. I have not missed a week in 7.5 years. It's going to take a friggin' anvil falling on my head, I think, for me to miss one of these things. Let's hope not. The way my luck's been going, I wouldn't be shocked. I'm going to be looking up now when I walk on the sidewalk. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But again, if you have questions, the mailbag's always open. You can follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. Hopefully I'll be more active on there this week. I've just been laying low and just, resting as much as I can. But, I can only do so much of that. I'll venture back to work this week, fingers crossed. Hopefully I'm okay. I'm trying not to push things too hard. And just take what I need to take. I have a couple of doctor's follow-ups this week. Hopefully I get good reports back on that and everything is okay. Thank you. A lot of you guys sent really nice messages and tweets to me, and I really appreciate that a lot. It means a lot to me. But I am okay. I'm alive, but I can honestly sit here and tell you the scariest thing I've ever been through in my entire life. Never had pain like that before. Hope to never have pain like that again. I don't really know what else to say about it, but that's something I'd like to put in my rear view mirror, and hopefully all is well going forward. One other thing that you could probably look forward to this week is the WWE Unreleased Matches DVD that came out in September. I know I'm a little late on this, but a lot of you never bought it. A lot of you perhaps are still on the fence even. I don't know how many of you are really buying DVDs anymore. I could tell you that I don't really buy DVDs hardly at all. I bought this one. Because this was one I was genuinely looking forward to. So I can't say that this is going to be part of a regular series going forward as far as DVD reviews. I will only buy DVDs when I'm really interested in seeing it. And this is one I was really interested in watching. I finally finished it. I've been taking my time. It's 3 discs, 45 matches over 3 discs, like 8 or 9 hours worth of material. A lot of stuff to get into. I'm going to have a full review, match by match. I'm not saying I'm doing like move for move reviews of every match, but I'm going match by match, disc by disc on this DVD. And it's like it's a trip down memory lane, number one. And number two, there's a lot of history to get into here. And I am going to have a lot of fun with this, and I hope you guys enjoy it. That should be going up sometime this week on the YouTube channel. That'll be a DVD extra, sound off extra, going up on the YouTube. So like a bonus sound off. So look for that. Like I said, follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. We'll be back next week. I know I didn't do takeover predictions this week, but I'll do my Survivor Series predictions on the show next week. I'll have a full review of NXT TakeOver War Games on the Sound Off. That'll be episode 522 next Sunday. Of course, followed by my Survivor Series review on YouTube later that night. So a lot of good stuff coming up. Thank you again for all the kind well wishes. and from a lot of the other podcasters and YouTube shows as well. I can't even name them all, but Steven Larson, you know, JD from New York, Kevin Castle, Wrestling Suit, Mish, Joey, all you guys. I mean, I heard from a lot of people, really kind of them to say things this week. So again, I appreciate the hell out of all of you. Until next time, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we will see you right back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
And there was one moron who tagged me in a tweet. He says, Marks like everything from Japan. This guy has a picture of The Rock as his avatar, and he's quoting wrestling catchphrases on his timeline, calling other people Marks and Smarks when you've got another man as your profile picture, and you're quoting Psycho Sid. Sit the fuck down with that nonsense. You don't get to sit at the adult table when you spew nonsense like that. Go stand in the corner and face the wall.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.